This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
With almost 40 countries visited under my belt, there's one that takes the number one spot. And today, you're going to learn exactly why. If you've been dreaming of exploring the vibrant streets of Bangkok, lounging on the stunning beaches of Phuket, or diving into Thailand's rich culture and incredible food, this episode has something for you. I'm joined by Ben of Ben's Big Deal, a true Thailand expert with deep family roots in the country. With over 20 visits under his belt, Ben shares insider information you won't find in travel guides. From Michelin star street food to hidden island gems and luxury hotels that won't break the bank, whether you're using points or cash. Learn where you should stay, what you should experience, and a mixture of history and insider tips you won't find anywhere else. If Thailand isn't on your bucket list yet, I promise you, it will be by the end of this episode. And now, on to the show.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, I have a fantastic guest that I'm excited to bring to all of you all today. Ben at Ben's Big Deal on Instagram. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you for having me, DeAndre. I'm really excited to be here.
Super excited to have you here. For longtime listeners of the show, I've probably mentioned, if not a couple dozen times when we talk about countries and travels, that my favorite place in the world that I've been to so far is Thailand. And I'm super excited to have someone who is not just an expert in points and miles, but an expert in Thailand travel as well on the show. And I know we have a lot of things that we could cover today. And as we were trying to figure out what were going to be the topics that are most relevant today, we said, you know what? Today, we're going to cover all in, do a deep dive about Thailand, and then I'm going to bring you back in the future and we're going to cover something else and do a deep dive on. So I'm super excited to deep dive on Thailand. But before we go through all of that, Ben, tell us a little bit about your background. Where are you from? You know, what do you do for a living? Is it just points and miles or something else? And when did you get into the points and miles and travel game as well?
All right, so what, Dikop? That's how we greet each other in Thailand. So what, Dikop? And I want to thank you for bringing up and really talking about a country that historically I always felt was underrepresented. My father and mother actually came here from Thailand back in the late 60s. I don't know if you know this, DeAndre. There is no Thai immigration to the U.S. until after 1965. Like, there's no Thais at all. And to look back now and to be, you know, my mom and dad met here and then had really one of the very first Thai restaurants in Los Angeles, which is where all the Thai people lived when they first came out here. If it wasn't for like Boston, because the king was born there, and Los Angeles ends up becoming, there's 76 provinces in Thailand, and we call Los Angeles the 77th province because there's that many Thais. We have one of the largest communities out here. And my dad ends up becoming one of the foremost people who created basically what we call Thai Town today. And Thai Town in Los Angeles, if anyone ever comes out to LA, has probably one of the best Thai restaurants and Thai food, as close as you're going to get to Bangkok if you ever come out here. My father and mother, when they came out here, they opened up a restaurant and they were fortunate enough. They didn't want me to be in the restaurant business. They said, you know what? I want you to go do something else. I ended up in the insurance business. My great-grandfather and my grandfather were in the insurance business. And I've been doing that now for 25 years with a license in life, health, property, casualty. I had my securities license as well. And I started teaching. That's how I ended up meeting my wife about 17 years ago. She walked into one of my classes and, a few years later, we're married and we have two wonderful kids. I decided around a few years into, actually not a few years, but about 20 years in, I was like, I need to find a role where I could be able to travel. I've always wanted to travel. In fact, I was going to go work for an airline that's no longer around called Northwest. And they eventually got bought out by Delta. And they went on strike right at that time. So that's what ended up pushing me toward my role in insurance because, you know, travel was so was very up and down at the time. And so one of the things that I wanted to do was to find a role where I could be able to travel. So I became a business traveler in insurance. So I was traveling to see insurance companies and I did everything from working for Progressive, Metromile, all the major insurance companies to selling eventually AI tools to them. But in about 2022, I decided that I was going to start Ben's Big Deal because this is really my love and passion. And if I can do this as long as I absolutely can, my wife actually gave me an ultimatum. She said, you know, you are now 8 years in this business, volunteering, giving away free information, helping everybody else travel the world, but it's time away from us. And she basically wanted me to stop, DeAndre. She's like, you need to stop this. Like, you can't do this anymore because it's just taking away time from our family. And for some of you listeners that are listening to this, you could get obsessed about this, really dive in the rabbit hole that you're like, you know, there's nothing else in this world. And then one of the things that my wife, I think we came to agreement on is if I can make it into a business, then she would allow me to keep on doing this. And next thing you know, it went from part-time 3 months to full-time 2.5 years later. Now I run tours to Thailand and I teach people about how to use points and miles. They'll find some of those things to get there.
So that's a pretty incredible ultimatum, right? Not in a bad way, but I mean, that's a motivator, right? Like, hey, it's like sink or swim, but if I want to find this passion, like I've got to swim. And that's a heck of a motivator for you to figure out what do you have to do in order to succeed. And coming from the background of being in the insurance space and being in the sales space, you obviously have that mindset around, I know how to go after what it is that I want. And kudos to you for being able to do that. And we all get the benefit from the expert and the knowledge that you have in front of us today. So super excited for that background.
Thank you.
So my question for you, I know we were talking off air, you have been to Thailand well over 20 times. I'm curious how much of that is, hey, you know, that's where I go because my family is there. If they are, I'm making an assumption, or versus how often do you go because, hey, this is a beautiful, fantastic, fun, vibrant country. Not that I'm biased at all.
Absolutely. You know, when I first was going there, I was going to go see family. We had a family home in Bangkok. It's actually, you know, interesting enough, Thailand is a Buddhist country, if you're not familiar, and it's actually one of the most Buddhist countries in the world. My family on both sides, mom and dad, are Catholic. And so Catholic is maybe 0.5% of Thais in the world. And so here's the thing a lot of people don't know. All the Buddhist people and all the rich people send their kids to Catholic schools in Thailand.
Wow.
It is. Ask them where they send their kids. It's St. Gabriel, Assumption University. They all send them to a Catholic school. And so my family actually got to go to these schools and did pretty well. You know, it's an interesting thing. So getting to understand kind of that perspective as an outsider, because even I'm born and raised here, and then I would go to Thailand during my summertime and during the wintertime and whenever we have a chance to go. But even then, you know, I'm an American. I don't really speak Thai. I didn't even share the same religion as many of the, we didn't practice Buddhism as well. So I went through this kind of birth and growth. Around the time I was 16, I ended up going to Thailand once, and I was going to write a letter, a postcard, and I literally, my mom's like, go to the post office or the mailbox on the corner of the street and go drop it off. So I'm walking over there, and I get there, and I realize I can't read because apparently in their mailbox, there's two. There's one for domestic and one for international. I need to put in the international slot. If I don't put the international slot, that postcard's not getting to the right place. And I couldn't ask anybody because I couldn't speak it. I couldn't read it. I was just like frustrated because I was like, some people go through this identity situation, especially when they're Asian American as well, when you're growing up in another country, that you're going, so I can relate to folks that go to a foreign country and you're like, I don't speak the language. How do I survive? We didn't have Google Translate. We didn't have the phones like that back then. And so you're doing a lot of miming. You're kind of trying to see if they can speak some English, but I couldn't do that. I walked back, you know, I was kind of disheartened because I was walking back and I couldn't mail it. And I was like, what kind of Thai person am I? I can't speak it. You know, when you live in America, You're not treated like, you know, I don't look like Brad Pitt or Ryan Reynolds, right? Growing up, by the way, DeAndre, when I was growing up and I was telling people that I was Thai, people would say all the time, oh, that's great. I love, you know, I love Taiwan or Taipei or something like that. I'm like, no, different country. When my dad opened up his restaurant, we couldn't call it Thai food. We had to call it Thai Chinese food. So in the first 10 years, every Thai restaurant was named Thai Chinese. Because now, luckily, my dad was ethnically Chinese. So it was the Chinese part of the Thai menu. So it was known for like duck noodle soup and boat noodle soup. If you ever had that on the street, like it was the original street food place. But trying to explain that to people was so difficult. And so this has always been a challenge with the Thai community. It's always been, we've been underrecognized. To see now today's that Thai food has become ubiquitous with American food, that most Americans have had it, or they think of spicy food, they think of Thai. I'm really proud as someone who's Thai American to show that to Americans that come to Thailand, because I think really when you're looking at traveling, if you really look at all the countries in the world that people really want to travel to, if you know there's one thread, and that's the food. They're familiar with the food, and if they're familiar with the food, it makes them want to go and try it out. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of folks, when they're thinking about traveling, there are certain countries they're not, you know, not at the top of their list, maybe because they're not familiar with the cuisine. I think that's been Thailand's big strength. Growing up in my first 10 years, so by the time I was 16, I decided I was going to learn Thai, and it took me about a few years later. I became fluent. Eventually, I became president of the Thai community here in Los Angeles, which is the biggest highlight I've ever had from a community-wise of being community leader. And so I got to the point where I was fluent. And when I decided I was going to learn about points and miles, because I just wanted to take my family once to Thailand a year and then take them domestically, that's how I got involved in points and miles around 2014. I was already 5 years a business traveler. I was doing it wrong completely. Wasn't earning points, wasn't miles. I wasn't having a credit card. I didn't understand how that whole thing worked. I didn't understand loyalty at the time and elite status. And once I figured that out, then I started actually staying in hotels. So now when I, probably now for the last 10 years, I've been staying in hotels now and not staying with family when I visit Thailand.
So for someone visiting Thailand for the first time, we hear pretty much of two different areas. We hear of Bangkok, we hear of Phuket. What would you say for someone that are the must-see destinations in Thailand outside of those two places?
Well, here's the thing. I think a lot of times you'll see or hear people say, well, if you go to Bangkok and Phuket, it's too tourist, there's too many people. I want to kind of, first of all, dispel, if this is your very first time, I don't think you should come to a country and miss all the highlights and just go to the lesser known places. Now, if this is your second time, your third time, your fourth time, and you want to see something else, I absolutely think you can. But if this is your very first time, I really don't think you should miss out on Bangkok, and I don't think you should miss out on Phuket as your first timer. So let me just start off with this. If you're going to Bangkok, there's a couple things that are important. And I just ran a tour about a month ago from a lot of people who were first timers. And I start off in Bangkok first. Number one is because that's where you're probably going to fly in, most likely, because that's one of the most visited airports in the world, Bangkok Suvarnabhumi Airport, BKK Airport. When you fly in that airport, you're going to have transportation straight to your hotel from the majority of people. Like you literally can take the train, the state train, and take the BTS right to your hotel. You don't even need to get a Uber if you don't really want to. You don't need to take the airport limousine. You literally can just go straight there. So from a connectivity, it's so much easier. Most of the hotels now are booked right on along the air train, which they call the BTS, the Bangkok Transportation Rail System. So I think it's one of the great things that people need to know. And when they're there, I think the great things about it is that there are beautiful temples. One of them is called the Grand Palace. And the Grand Palace is open usually every day. So don't get caught up in the scam that says that it's not, but it's always open. And here's a little story about that Grand Palace and why it's important. There's a lot of palaces in Thailand. But at the time, the king of Thailand, there's 10 right now in our dynasty. Every king got their own palace. So let's say your father died and you became the king. You got to build your own palace. And in that compound, you have different palaces. So you have like 300-400 years worth of palace with different architectures all in kind of within the same ground. So it's really gorgeous and beautiful. I don't think people should miss out that. The other thing that they should also get a chance to do is to be able to do a canal tour. Thailand has the canal tour, and right now they're fixing one of the really big sitting Buddhas out there. It's beautiful. It's a good chance. Right from the Grand Palace, you can go over there. Another thing that you could be able to do when you're in Bangkok is actually take one of their transportation, which is unique, called tuk-tuk. These are like motorized three bicycles that are really fun. It could be a thrill ride for some people.
Or life-changing one way or the other for you. Yeah, they're pretty exciting and can be terrifying.
Yes, all that is going on. And then at the same time, they have wonderful malls. Now, I know Los Angeles and the U.S. is probably not big on mall culture right now, but depending what time of the year you're going, it can get pretty warm and hot and muggy. And so they have these wonderful, big, huge malls that you can go into. All the street food moved inside the mall into the food courts now, because a lot of the second generation kids didn't want to take over their mom and dad's famous Michelin star restaurant. So they brought them inside the food court. So now you have Michelin star food courts in Thailand, in Bangkok as well. So I think Bangkok is the first place you want to get, because you want to understand the culture, the people. They do speak English there, or a lot of the people that work there will be able to speak more English. So you're going to be able to get that. Same thing with Phuket. Once you go down south to Phuket in that region there, it's like Cancun of Thailand. It is a tourist town, but I will tell you, they have beautiful beaches. There's tons of hotels. If you have points and miles, you could be able to stay there as well. You know, if you have Hyatt points, you totally can do well. If you have Hilton points, you can do well. If you do Marriott points, you could do well. I mean, literally every brand of hotel, you could be able to stay there. There's a great selection. I have primarily been staying between Hyatt and a few Marriotts in Thailand. That totally worked. It's funny. This last time, I spent a lot of time at IHG properties, you know, and so there are some other cities outside of Phuket, and I'm going to bring one. And it's the one I used to go to a lot when I was a kid, and it's really under the radar. No, most people do not talk about it. But it's called Hua Hin. Hua Hin is about 2.5 hours outside of Bangkok. It is driving distance. So if you don't want to get on a plane and you just want to go to a beach town that is cool and has a lot of points hotels, a great environment, and it's kind of a sleepier beach town, Hua Hin. There's a Hyatt Regency over there. That's wonderful. But over there, they also have an IHG property, DeAndre. If anybody here has kids and you're going, I wish I can go to a hotel that not just had a pool, but the kids would get excited about. What if they had a water park? What if my hotel had a water park? Yes, the IHG Holiday Inn Hua Hin is a resort. And most people think Holiday Inn, but Holiday Inn has this one level that not too many properties have, which is called Holiday Inn Resort. And it's a full-on four-star. It's a, you know, there's like 40 stories, and they have their own infinity pool. I mean, I'm full-on infinity pool with the bar. And if you want to go down, and you can go that after the park closes at 5 p.m., you can go to the infinity pool at the hotel. So it's a beautiful place. The room rates, cash rates are fantastic. I mean, we're talking like maybe I got a like family room with a bunk bed. Kids are going to like that. Bunk bed rooms. Parents have their own king bed. The kids got a bunk bed and they're going to love it. They got to put a tent up. I got it for like $120 a night, $150 a night. You can't beat that. If you have points, you can use your IHG points as well. So points wise, cash wise. In fact, a lot of times when I'm in Thailand, I will look at Thailand as a cash rate country. And then I'll use it to accumulate. Because here's the way you should look at it. Instead of saying every single time I should be redeeming points, you should say this. Is this a points earning opportunity? Or is this a points redeeming opportunity? I think that's how people should look at points when they're coming in as they grow more and more into this.
I think that's fantastic. And one of the things that I always share with people about my experience when I went to Thailand, now granted, this was in August of 2019 when I went, I spent a few weeks there, was that everything was inexpensive, but quality. So I stayed at a 4 or 5 star hotel in Bangkok, and I paid $94 a night. The Grand Palace was exceptionally beautiful to tour through. I will say it was extremely hot, and with the palaces and the temples, for the listeners out there, you got to wear pants, which is where those nice Thai elephant pants come in, because they're very breezy, which is nice. But everything is both quality and inexpensive. I don't want to say cheap because it's inexpensive. So as you said, Holiday Inn, beautiful property, which most people wouldn't attest to the name and the brand Holiday Inn. But one of the things that we've mentioned on this show before is outside of America, Holiday Inns are pretty nice. When we were in Singapore, we saw some really nice looking Holiday Inns that you would think would be the label of a, you know, Grand Hyatt or Hyatt Regency or something along those lines. So I think it's fantastic when you share some of these things that, you know, again, if you haven't left the country or you haven't gone to some of these other destinations, especially in Asia, you would never notice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would say whatever brand you think of, add one more star to that when you go to Thailand.
I love that. And so on the subject of our hotel and accommodations, are there any other really sought after, maybe redeemable on points hotels or resorts? You know, like everyone talks about the Park Hyatt Maldives or the Andaz Mayacoba, Mexico, whatever it may be. You don't really hear about a lot of destinations in Thailand specifically, but you just said all the brands under all the points and everything are there, what have been some other of your favorite points destinations, or just you didn't redeem points, but you accrued points because the cash rate was so low, but you thought the resort was fantastic?
Yeah, I've used points and I've used cash historically there. Back in 2021, when the country had just opened, I decided I'm going to spend there 60 days. I was in hotels. I was there 60 days in hotels. And I don't think I stayed at one hotel more than 5 days. So I actually went to like 20 different hotels during my 60-day period. It was craziness. But I'll tell you a little bit of the experience. And that was primarily between Bangkok and Phuket. So I know I'm pretty well at this point. But I will say, if you're heading to Bangkok, let's just talk about Hyatt for a second. Hyatt, when I first got there back in 2014, we only had the Grand Hyatt Erawan. The Erawan Hyatt is a wonderful location and it's a great place. However, my current favorite in Bangkok is a Category 2 property called the Hyatt Regency Bangkok Sukhumvit. It is in the Nanas region. It is lots of stuff you could be able to see. It's near Terminal 21, which is a nice mall in that area. And it's run well by Sammy, who's the GM over there. They do a fantastic job. They have a great lounge. They have a great breakfast buffet. And then if you're a globalist, you could actually get both. Like you can do that breakfast or in your appetizer evening in the lounge, or you can have breakfast or you could do both if you wanted to, if your stomach can handle it. But you can be able to do the restaurant or the lounge. So that's a really nice perk when you go to Bangkok. You can be able to find that you will have access to both if you have top tier status. That's one of my favorite ones. In the IHG world, I want to say that it's totally on the radar. People don't see it, but it's a great property. It's called the Kimpton Malai. The Kimpton Malai is a great property. It's not off the BTS like some of them, so it doesn't get all of the attention. But if you are earning IHG points or if you have diamond status with IHG, I totally recommend the Kimpton. If it was right on the BTS, that would be my number one. That's my only knock on it, is a little bit off. It's not too far a walk to the BTS system, which helps you get around because the traffic in Bangkok can be pretty gnarly. So I would say that. If I'm looking at a Marriott, now, my wife loves, especially when she's long-term, she wants to do her own laundry. Although laundry, you could easily send out. But one time she had it where they kind of burned her pants. And so she's like, no, I'm going to do it myself. So she decides she wants to go do it herself. So because of that, she loves it when we can stay at a place that has its own washer. So there is a hotel, a Marriott hotel, that has its own washer, has a kitchen, has a living room and everything. And it's called the Marriott Surawongsi. The Surawongsi is in the Chinatown district of Bangkok. And that's a great hidden gem, in my opinion. If you've ever been in Thailand, you know 7-Elevens are everywhere, right?
Yep.
The owner, 7-Eleven, owns this hotel. This is their backyard. So the owner's daughter, behind the hotel, that's where the residents of the 7-Eleven owners are. They're Chinese. And so this is their backyard. The daughter of the owner said, Dad, I want to have my own hotel because, you know, when my friends come over, I want to have a nice hotel for them to stay. So they built the hotel for them and then they got a deal with Marriott. And now it's a Marriott hotel. It has a beautiful M lounge and they have 2-bedroom condos, 1-bedroom, 3-bedroom, but they didn't sell them all out. So they rent them out now for hotel guests. So you can actually get upgraded using your Marriott Night certificate into a 1-bedroom.
Wow.
Yes. So Marriott property, I know there's a ton, but that one to me, if you have a family and you want a washer and all that and kitchen and they have a great breakfast as well, that's a great one. That's called the Marriott Surawongsi. That's a beautiful one. And then if you're looking at Hilton, I'm not a fan of the Conrad in Bangkok, but they're opening a new one. They're actually opening up a second one. The Conrad original one is a little bit old, it's getting too many years under it and I think it needs a remodel. But it's interesting, they're opening up a brand new Conrad. So they're going to have 2 Conrads in Bangkok one day. So that'll be interesting to see. And then the Waldorf Astoria is absolutely one of the best properties. Even though they don't have a lot of suites and things like that, even if you have diamond status, I'm telling you, their regular room is great. Their breakfast is one of the best. Pool is awesome. It's on a high floor. It's right next to the Grand Hyatt Erawan in Bangkok. So the location is great next to Central World. So those are some of my favorites in Bangkok.
So pivoting from the hotel strategy, because that was amazing, especially some of the insider advice there. Pivoting from hotels to travel, flights, how would someone maximize points and miles to travel to Thailand? Because obviously, everyone that I talk to, they say, yeah, I hear it's so inexpensive once you get there, but it's expensive to get there. And Bali is very similar as well, right? So I'm curious, for those of us that are in the points and miles world, what should we be looking at? What are some of the best redemptions or the routes that you typically take, which you know, you and I are on the other side of the country, right? So it's a little bit easier from an LAX versus me. I'm over here. Closest major airport to me is DC. So how would you advise people that want to get to Thailand but don't want to cough up the dollars? Or if they do, they at least want to do it in style with business class.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'll say this. The question is, when you're on the East Coast, which way do you want to go? Do you want to go West Coast through the Pacific or East Coast through the Atlantic? I will say this. I think if you're using points and miles, it's a little more fun, but a little bit more work to be able to, because you're going to need two long haul flights. You need to get one to either Europe and then get from Europe into Asia. Or if you're going to have to go through the Middle East, which will be another option, go through that way to get there. So Qatar has a direct flight from Doha to Bangkok. Emirates runs daily Dubai to Bangkok. You know, if you fly Finnair, they have Helsinki to Bangkok nonstop. So those are like 12 to 13 hour flights right there. They even have Iberia too. So there's a lot of that, but there's more on the West Coast. There's more on the West Coast. So if you're trying to kind of get to more options and opportunities, I would say going to the West Coast to the Pacific. And then those cities will be LAX, San Francisco, Seattle, even Vancouver. Any place with a good Asian community, which makes sense. There'll be a natural need for people to go to these countries because there has to be, they got to fill up those planes. There's like 300 people on a plane. So it's not just tourists there. These are people who are trying to probably get home. So looking for cities that have a natural Asian population, LAX, San Francisco, Seattle, Vancouver. Those are going to be my top ones that people should be looking at.
Hey, everyone. I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. DeAndre here, and I just wanted to interrupt briefly to remind you of two things. First, be sure to sign up for our newsletter where we give you direct access to travel updates, news you'll want to jump on in the points and miles world, and our continuously updated card offers to maximize your travel rewards, often before they're ever mentioned in the show. Also, if you didn't already know, we have a private Facebook group where we share news as it breaks, ideas, and other things that don't make it into the newsletter or show many times. And that's the best place to get your points and miles question answered directly by me and other travel enthusiasts. Both of these links will be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Very cool. Now, what about when you're in Thailand, right? And so in my experience, when I went, I spent a few days in Bangkok. It was August. It was hot, it like very hot. And so ended up taking, which I will never do again, taking a night train from Bangkok to Chiang Mai. So that's a whole other story. I'm happy to talk about why I will never do that again. That was like me living the, you know, solo travel life where I'm like, you know what, a $30 plane ticket would have covered this ride.
It's not that it's expensive to fly that route.
I know, it's exactly. And then I ended up going from Chiang Mai and flying down south to Krabi, which is where I didn't actually go to Phuket. I went to Rylai Beach. But I know to getting around Thailand, right, you can train, you can fly. So what about moving throughout the country? Is that more of a cash payment, points and miles? What would you recommend?
Well, first of all, we have a lot of low-cost carriers that fly. Just like think about, you know, we have Spirit and Frontier here. We have that version in Thailand well. You know, Air Asia, Vietjet, Nope Air, there's quite a bit. And we even have a domestic airport in Bangkok just for that. So we have Suvarnabhumi, which is our international airport. But then we actually have DMK, which is Don Mueang Airport, and that just handles basically Bangkok to Phuket, Bangkok to Chiang Mai, you know, and now Bangkok Airways flying to like Bangkok to Sukhothai and some like Krabi and things like that that you went to. I would definitely say that if you're trying to go to Chiang Mai or Phuket, you should definitely book a flight. But it goes so often, so regular. I mean, you don't even have to book it ahead of time. So if you're not sure when you want to go yet, even after you land and you get to Bangkok and you want to fly out a day before or two, 3 days before, you can still do it for a lot of times for anywhere between, you know, without the bag fee, but we're talking anywhere between $35 to like 85, maybe $100 at the most. So, I mean, less than $100, you can fly one way or round trip, depending on when you buy it, to these destinations. So you don't need to worry about it too much. Now, if you want to be able to do a tour with me and I plan it all out for you, you could do that. But I'm just saying there that just get your main flights there and you can be able to decide if that's something you want to do, but it's really affordable. I don't think people should, if they're trying to go farther distance, because like, for example, you can drive to Chiang Mai from Bangkok, but if you do it, we're talking like you're probably going to overnight somewhere on along the way there, because along the way, you're probably going to stop at some great places and restaurants and eat. I would probably stop in Sukhothai, which is an ancient capital of the north before, on the way to Chiang Mai. But I would definitely fly. It's totally fine. And then when you get there to Bangkok, or even going to places like Hoi An, which was 2 hours away, you can grab an Uber. But most of the time, people over there use Grab. It's an app over there. So if you're heading over there, I would use Grab. And another one's called Bolt, B-O-L-T. They also do food delivery. Grab does food delivery. They're very big over there. They have a few food delivery. And here's my little hack too. If you're at a hotel and let's say you don't want to pay for overpriced hotel food, I would pull up your Grab app and then order. There were times where I was staying at a hotel. I just didn't feel the food so much. I can tell right from breakfast, I wasn't going to like lunch. So I would open up the Grab app and literally order Uber Eats or Grab to deliver to the hotel. And I would just go up to the front desk and just wait for them. And it was super cheap. I mean, and it was really tasty and it was local places. So those are things that folks can do as well.
Yeah. When I went, Grab wasn't a thing, or if it was, it really wasn't super popular. However, in Bali, when we went there last year, Bali, you know, Grab was everywhere, just like Gojek's as well. And so the ability to order, whether it's a scooter ride, so you're holding on to the back of someone, a tuk-tuk, whatever it may be, you have those opportunities for. But that's a perfect segue when it comes to the food side of things. You know, there's two things that I do want to make sure that we get out of this conversation today, outside the points and miles and the other aspects we've covered, which is the experience of being in Thailand. And I think one of those is going to be the cuisine, the food, the dining, which you've alluded to, but I want to dig a little bit deeper on that. And the other, which I want to get to, is the experiences, the cultural side of things, what it's like when you're hanging out with monks or elephants or whatever it may be as well. So I want to capture those two pieces. And let's just first start with food and cuisine. What are the go-to dishes, experiences? Of course, you mentioned that your father opened up probably one of the first, you know, as they called it, Thai Chinese, you know, noodle shops here in the U.S. What are those meals and things that people need to experience when they go to Thailand? Because I saw a lot of really crazy things, but also some really great things as well, some very tasty foods. So what would you suggest?
Well, I'm going to start off with this little history on Thai food. Thailand is like America, meaning that we are a country of immigrants. Thailand, actually, the word Thai actually means free. So Thailand actually means land of the free. And the reason we call that, before it was called Siam, or S-I-A-M, Siam. And the reason that was given by the foreigners that called Thailand that. And then when King Rama V ended slavery, because he was a contemporary of Abraham Lincoln, he ended up freeing all the slaves. It was Thais having other Thais as slaves. It wasn't like we had foreigners. It was just Thais having other Thais as slaves. But when they ended slavery, it became Thailand. That's why it means land of the free. And we've always had open borders. Look at our religion. You know, the Theravada Buddhism religion is not a Thai religion. It is an Indian religion. You know, Buddha, you know, they say you can't be a prophet in your own home. So, I mean, even to this day, there's probably a higher percentage of Buddhists in Thailand than there is in India, which is a home of Buddhism, you know. So, I mean, you look at things like that. And then Thai Buddhism takes a lot of Hindu, which comes from India as well. So I would say that Thailand is a mixture of Hindu, Buddhist. I mean, 80% of Thailand is Buddhist. And I think that affects a lot of everything, because this culture in Thailand of sabai, sabai. You may have heard this term, sabai, sabai, which means like we chill. I mean, the word sabai, like Thailand and chill is like right there. And you can see people aren't happy. People say about Thailand is one of the most hospitable places that you could ever visit. People are really friendly. Doesn't matter if you're staying at a one-star hotel to a five-star hotel. The Thai people have always been, this is part of their culture, and I think it has a lot to do with being Buddhist. You know, as somebody who's Catholic, who's always kind of watched how Thai Buddhists have been, I don't even think you could be Thai without having Buddhist, because it's so wrapped up together, which is, and if you're not familiar, Buddhism has always been to let it go, like to not be attached to the material, not to be attached to where it is here and now, and to be able to give alms. Like one of the things that we do, and we're talking about monks for a second, many people don't realize in Thailand, the monks are not allowed to touch women. The monks are not allowed to drink. The monks are not allowed to do a lot of things, even to hold money and things like that. So what happens is every morning they come out at like 6 a.m. and they have a pot where they have a bowl where they open up, and the parishioners, they basically give them food, and then they can only eat once a day. And so it's a beautiful thing to see that to survive, you're depending on the community. To see that the community values the people who are upholding the religion. In fact, the king of Thailand is the upholder of Thai Buddhism. And Thai Buddhism has always been about, we allow it to happen. So in terms of religion, they allow. In terms of gender identity. I mean, I'll say this. We've had LGBTQ before it was a thing in America. In fact, I'm going to address this because a lot of people say, oh, you go to Thailand, you know, watch out, the women look like men. Here's the thing. Let me explain this for a second. If you're a culture that allows people to be who they are, if you're a culture that allows people to be there in its true sense, okay, and America hasn't figured this part out yet, they allow these kids, if they realize that maybe they are a woman, but they're born in a man's body, they allow them to take hormones, the estrogen hormones, as they're going through puberty. So the reason they look like women is because they've been taking estrogen ever since they were little. Through puberty, you can actually end up having a lot of the female from the voice or the hair. I mean, it just looks, that's why it looks like that. But they still have to keep on taking it in order for them to kind of suppress their testosterone and things like that. But that is one of the reasons why. But as a Thai community, as a culture, we accept who they are, and we've always had, so we've called them gatai. Gatai is a word, what we have, what Americans call, what we call in English, ladyboy. But they've accepted who they are. They don't try to say that they're women. They know they're not a man, but they know they're not a woman. Like, they accept as a third gender. And I think that's one of the things that if America could learn about is accepting people for who they are. That is what I think everybody wants to be. You want to be accepted for who you are, whether you choose it or not. You know, that's who you are, and accept it. I think hopefully as Americans, we can eventually, and when you go there, you're going to see we as Thais just accept it. In fact, we just legalized marriage, you know, gay marriage like recently, like a month ago. So it's become, you know, we are coming around to all those things that are happening, but you're going to see it's a very open and diverse culture. And so safety is there. I think there is all that. And if you are looking at that aspect of it and you're looking to see like, I'm different, are they going to treat me differently? I think they're going to be well received. And I think you're going to see that more and more. But when it comes to the food, I know I talked about the culture first, but let me just talk about the food for a second. Pad Thai is probably the most popular thing that most people do that know about Thai food. I will just say this. It is not the most popular food in Thailand. And the reason is not because it's not good, but it doesn't have the history and culture. I'll give you a little background. Pad Thai was started around the 1940s. It started off with the rice shortage. When my father was born, we were running out of rice. We had a drought. And so the Thai government, in order to kind of help ration the rice, they started pushing rice noodles because you can add water with the rice. They would ground the rice down, add water, and became rice noodle. So they really being pushed on rice noodles. So they wanted everybody to eat rice noodles. That was their way of rationing food. And in the end, they ended up having a contest like for the best recipe because they were trying to start promoting these rice noodles overseas as a new food product. And so the winner was a recipe and was chosen by Prime Minister, which was Pad Thai. So it wasn't until probably the mid-40s we started having Pad Thai. And Pad Thai became our international export. Not what Thai people like normally ate at home, but it was another dish. And so when you go to Thai food, you're going to look at what makes Thai food. Here's a misconception people have with Thai food, that it's always spicy. And I want to clarify, when I did my tour with my group of 25, one of the things I said to them, I said, Thai food is not just about spicy. Thai food is about a balance of flavor. It's supposed to be sweet, salty, spicy, sour. It has like this umami flavor. It should be all that in one bite. So I think the reason why Thai food's taken off, whereas maybe other countries, Asian dishes isn't as taken off. You know, there's other countries that have great food, but I think it's because when you eat Thai food, you get in your palate salty, spicy, sour. Ooh, I like it because it hits all those texture, you know, all those kind of things that people are looking for when they're eating food. And I think that's one thing. So I actually, one thing I'm going to give a little advice for people, and nobody in my group, all 25, none of them end up any, you know what you call Bali, the Bali belly or the India belly.
Bali belly, Montezuma's revenge in Mexico, all the things.
And I'm going to tell you right now, the reason I think that is, and I've done it myself because I go all the time because I got that American stomach, like, and I eat spicy here. Even you go, well, Ben, I eat spicy there. Yeah, but the spicy there is not the same spicy here. I would say in the first week, there's a lot of Thai food that you can try. But if you're eating too much spicy food early on in your first week there, you're going to have the runs eventually. So I'm going to say lay off the spice. Try other dishes that are not spicy. There are a lot of great dishes. There's cow man kai. There's like a Hainan chicken, which is fantastic. One of my great perfect dishes. There are dishes that are supposed to be not spicy. It's not like you just go no spice. Like they're not meant to be spicy. They're salty, sweet, sour. They get all that crunch and texture that is not just spicy. So you could try like a rice dish like ham hock on rice. You can try a noodle dish like beef noodle soup or boat noodle soup. Or you could try some of the great international dishes. Thailand is not just about Thai dishes. Over the last 25 years, we have much more of an international cuisine that have come to play. So they have great, you know, Italian pizza. You could be able to find Mexican food now in Thailand as well.
And so for the person listening to this that just got really hungry with all the food that you just named, what should they anticipate the cost of these meals being, right? I think that's one of the biggest shock factors I experience when going to Thailand and eating all these incredible foods. What should you pay for food?
DeAndre, I feel like when I come back to America, I've been starving my whole life. Like when I'm in Thailand, I feel like there's food. Like I think Thai people eat 5 times a day, if I'm not wrong. And by the way, the minimum wage that people make is probably like 300 baht a day, okay? 300 baht a day, which I'm sorry, maybe like 150 or 300. Maybe they make at most, they're making somewhere between 5 bucks to 10 bucks a day. And so they need to be able to afford to eat out. Now, depending on how much you're making, that could be 25% of your income. But if you go over there as, you know, as a tourist, you're going to find like dishes that are probably, I mean, I've seen it go up or a little bit over time. But you can get a bowl of noodles for like $2. You can get, you know, easily, you know, $2 to $3. I fed my family of three, sometimes or four, but I fed my family with drinks, you know, soft drinks and everything like that, and water and all the dishes that we wanted to were full. And I haven't spent more than $20. Like $20, you can feed a whole family. I mean, imagine trying to do that here in Los Angeles or at East Coast or anywhere there. It's crazy. I mean, that's at least, and I look at the $20 I spend there, it's probably easily $100 or more now in the US.
And so I know that was one of the biggest things because out of pocket, I mean, you literally were talking amazing food, great experiences. I mean, whether you walked into a restaurant or it was street food or it was a night market, I mean, $2, $3, $4 for a meal, a complete meal was phenomenal. And that was the part that really surprised me and also made the wallet a little bit lighter from a budgeting standpoint.
And even if you want to eat a Michelin star place, like, let's just go to that point. I mean, Thailand has it all. They have street food, they have mall food, they have restaurants, beautiful restaurants in malls, or you can go Michelin. If you want to do Michelin, you could do it for like $100, something that would maybe do $250 here per head. You could do for $100 at a great Michelin star, like, you know, full on with the, you know, with the ice and it's, you know, and with the, you know, the tasting menu. You can do all that kind of stuff, but you can also do Michelin star street food. They have that as well. So, I mean, it's all there. It's all available. But I will say this, if you are looking for non-Michelin star, but great food, I would look for something called Wong Nai. Wong Nai is W-O-N-G-N-A-I. That is the official line. You know, line, okay, line and Grab. Grab has a competitor that does a food delivery. One of the other one is called Line. In Thailand, a lot of the Thai people use Line, L-I-N-E. That's an app they use to communicate each other. Like that's their version of WhatsApp or Facebook. It's called Line. So they have a food delivery service with that app called Line Man. And they actually do a ranking of the restaurants that are most often requested. It makes sense, right? Like it would make sense that they would know because they're out there all the time. They do an annual review of like the most requested restaurants or most popular restaurants they order. And it's called Wong Nai, W-N-G-N-A-I. So that's a special, like that's an insider tip that a lot of people without having to look in Michelin star, you just want to go, what do local people eat? Go check out what does Wong Nai say.
I love that tip. I mean, next time we go to Thailand, I'm looking that up myself because eating like a local is one of the best things about experiencing travel. And in the same realm of how things are inexpensive but quality, I remember, so I spent a night on Khao San Road, which is their version of Bourbon Street, which is probably one of the wildest places I've ever been in my entire life. But I will say I got a bucket, like a rum bucket, like a rum and coke, like a literal bucket to drink out of that was $5 US. And like bottle service was like $100 for a full bottle of rum with like a bunch of sodas for like a whole table. Like it was absolutely unreal. So things were very expensive there, but even just, and similar to our experience in Bali, massages, a massage for 90 minutes, $10 to $15. And to your same point, when you talked about the kind of the culture and the lady boys and all those different things, right? People hear massage Thailand, they think, oh, everything, it gets weird. No, like, these are like high quality, very good massages. I think I had almost a massage every single day. So I had like 12 massages in the span of, I don't know, 15 days or something like that. And the two best ones that I had, one was from a pretty burly dude who did some sort of compression massage where he like ripped my spine in half, which it felt amazing. And the second was this old lady. She had to be probably close to 80 years old. And I remember she just said to me in her very little English that she knew, she said, "Today you die." and she climbed on top of the table and she walked on me, but she literally put her all, you know, whatever she was, 90 pounds of her was walking on my singular calf muscle, right? Like it was an intense massage and quality. And I think, you know, the massage itself must have been $10, and probably I think I doubled it or tripled it from a tip standpoint as well. So the quality and the experience there is, I think, what just makes this place so amazing.
It is. If people are looking for recommendation and you're looking for a legit place and, you know, kind of like the Starbucks of Thai massage, you should look for a place called Healthland. Healthland is a very good place, and there's lots of places out there. In fact, I think I was in Chiang Mai and they had like a two-story building that looked like a palace. At first, I was like, is this a palace? No, it's a massage place called Healthland. So they have those throughout the city in Bangkok and throughout different cities. And if you want to go high-end, which is where I took my group trip to, you could go to Let's Relax. Some of the higher-end hotels have a Let's Relax. And that's like during COVID, they would do a COVID test before you can even get a massage. It was cool. Like they would do a COVID test there to make sure that you didn't catch anything and that you were going to be safe. I mean, they just have all the protocol. And I mean, don't forget, DeAndre, I don't know, but a lot of these higher end places too, they also give you like the mango and the sticky rice when you're done, and they give you a little tea. It's always fun.
Yeah, the quality on what they deliver is great. And before we wrap this one up, Ben, I do want to touch on some of the other cultural aspects with Thailand as well, referring to some of the other parts that I think could attract people, right? There's an opportunity to visit the temples. There's an opportunity to listen to the monks chatting. I know from my personal experience, you know, I was able to hike some waterfalls, like the sticky waterfalls in Chiang Mai, which you can actually climb up the waterfalls, which are really cool. But also there's the opportunity to be around animals. And this is where things can go in two different directions, because there's animals that are mistreated and there's animals that are cared for diligently. And so I'm going to share my experience. But before I get to my experience, I want to hear what you have to say as far as advice for travelers that really want to embrace other elements of Thailand culture outside of just the city, the tours, the beaches.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of for everyone. If you are going to places like Chiang Mai or Sukhothai, or if you want to see more of the beautiful nature piece of it, you will have a chance to get access to animals that in the U.S. you would never get a chance to be able to feed a kangaroo. You're not going to be able to bathe an elephant and things like that. Let me give you a background on the elephant situation. And I know how Americans feel about mistreatment of animals. I don't think anybody, Thais as well, they don't want to. But I want to give a different perspective that nobody ever says, and unless you actually ever talk to these people who actually raise the elephants. And one of the things I want to share with this has been a challenge. The elephants eat a lot. I don't know if anybody realized they're eating like 200-300 kilos of food a day. That gets really expensive. Even if Thailand food is cheap, you as a person, very difficult to do that. And so they had to figure out what is it in the past. I'm just going to give you a little background. In the past, what would it we need to do to make a living with this animal? Because back in the day, they used to use the elephants to help them with farmland. Like they were work animals, just like anytime you have, I mean, we have machines nowadays in the U.S., but imagine back in the day, we had horses, you know, we didn't have cars, we had horses. So at some level, understand that part and not try to put like U.S. perspective on them and going, well, they should not be using these things for I mean, I just told you, they make 10 bucks a day at most. They don't have the money or credit to be able to buy the heavy machinery. So what happened over time, by the way, I'm not justifying any of these things. I just want to give people perspective on how we got there. And so what happened was they would literally have these things where elephants are the most beautiful and smartest animals out there. They remember you. DeAndre, if you meet an elephant and you come back 5 years later, he probably remembers you. If you treat him well or bad, he'll probably remember you for that, okay? So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. Now, they were doing things like they were having shows where they would teach the elephant to kick the ball and paint and do all these things, which are amazing. But in order to train them to get there, sometimes it wasn't done very well and it was cruel. And I think as most Thai people, I don't think we wanted to support that. But that was what we thought foreigners wanted when they came. They wanted to see the elephant. How are we going to give interaction? And then slowly but surely over the last probably 5 or 6 years or 10 years, there's been more of activist rights that say, you can't do that anymore. And I think a lot of them shut down and then moved into the kind of the elephant sanctuary saying, oh, people will come if you bathe them, if you feed them. And that's what it's become and turned into now. I'm not actually even saying that every sanctuary is the right sanctuary. Some of them, they may or may not necessarily still treat them well. But I think a lot of people want to be able to have access and be able to talk. Now, I think the elephant thing is a lot better than going to a place like Animal Kingdom, Tiger Kingdom. There's places you can go and take pictures with tigers and ligers and other wild cats. That one I'm a little bit, I know, actually, I'm very strong against because I've been to it to go look at it.
Same here.
Because you know they had to drug the animal in order. So I don't know, drugging the animal, if that's the right thing. So I'm much more, people talk about the elephants all the time, but I'm like, what about the damn cats? It's beautiful to go see them, but to be able to go in there and have to drug the animal, so I'm not supportive of those kind of things. So be aware when you're going to go do those type of things and just ask how they're going to be treated. But I think it's beautiful to have places like Safari World, where it's more of like a zoo, but you'll be able to feed the kangaroos and they treat them well. I think those are great things as well. Be mindful of when you're going to visit Thailand.
And I love that you brought that up. And I was hoping that you would bring that up because that's something that, since being there, I'm very passionately strong against as well. And I did not do that on the wild cat side because of the fact that the only way you can get into a cage to take photos for Instagram with a, you know, Bengal tiger is if it's drugged, right? That's just not healthy at all. But I think if you really do your research, and that's what I wanted the listeners to hear, is that there are some really incredible experiences, but you go to Thailand, would want you to do your research a little bit to know what are you doing. For instance, the experience that I had was a fantastic elephant sanctuary. This one was very specific. It was specifically for retired farm elephants. So the youngest elephant there was like 64 and the oldest one was 94. And to what you said, we got to make food for the elephants. You got to feed them. We got to bathe them. Actually walking into the river with the elephant and like scrubbing its back, all the different things. It was an incredible, incredible experience with an elephant that was, you know, the same age as my grandmother, right? And it's almost like an older puppy, as playful as it is. Big one, but an older puppy. So these are the parts of Thailand where people ask me, what do you like the most? It's like, well, I can't decide between the beautiful beaches, the cultural, the food. It literally has everything. Nightlife, you name it, whatever you want out of travel, you can get, which is what I wanted to make sure that we really got across today.
It checks off every box. And my wife thinks I'm just biased. I said, no, I'm just born lucky that I was Thai. I can speak the language now, but it checks off every box. Like bringing up something that you want that usually most of the time Thailand has it, and it makes it affordable that you could be able to do it. So once you guys get there, I think it's a beautiful place for you to be able to go. And you know what? Bangkok from there, you can go a lot of places, but I think a lot of people underlook it. They're like, oh, and I need to get to go to Singapore. Oh, I need to go to, I'm like, Singapore is a 2-3 day thing at the most. And then you're going to go eat. I'm like, you could go eat that. They have a lot of Singapore places there. And then you don't have to go to the, you know, market outdoors. In Thailand, it would be nice and cool. So I think there's things like that I think it fits a lot of things that you're looking for on a vacation. So it's still my favorite place in the world.
So as we wrap this one up, Ben, and I'm glad you agree that it's one of your favorite places in the world, because it is still my favorite place in the world that I have been yet to date. When is the best time for someone to go, considering both weather, travel costs, all the different things? Someone that's listened to this episode and they say, perfect, I'm putting Thailand on my list. When should they go?
Okay, so if you want to go there at a cultural celebration, that's kind of cool and unique that you can't really do any other time, is on April 13 to 15 is Thai New Year's. We celebrate Thai New Year's as an opening of summer. It's not the beginning of the year in winter, but it's the beginning of summer. And so because it's the beginning of summer, it's hot, super hot. We kind of also know it as the water splashing ceremony. And so there's literally, I kid you not, it's like the biggest water fight in the world. So Khao San Road, where you're at, that's where all the foreigners and the Thais go to go play with the foreigners. And they bring their water guns, they bring their goggles, they bring shorts, they're dressed up in their swimsuit and their water guns. And they're having the biggest water fight like on this 1 kilometer block area. But if you go other places around too, like on the street, you literally will find people will bring their pickup trucks, okay? Their pickup trucks. Then they'll have this huge basin of water. And then 20 people jump on the back of the truck. They fill up their buckets and their water guns, and they'll stop at the red light and they're shooting water literally at the car next to them. And the car next to them, they should have something and they're shooting back. So there's a water gun fight at a red light. And if you're on a motorcycle, they'll walk up to you, they'll put powder on your face, they're throwing water. So all these people got like a cake white powder on there. It's literally a whole citywide. Like, and if you're out there that day, you know you're going to get wet because you're there to go party. So imagine not a party that's related just to one street, but literally the whole city, the whole country. If you want to go there, opening is on April 13, 14, 15. Now, keep in mind, too, some of the locals, you know, it's a long holiday. They aren't going home, but it's a great time to go to have fun. Now, if you want better weather, that's why I always do my group trips in December and January. So if anybody's interested in coming with me in January, December, January is their cool season. So the way I would say that the weather looks like is the cool season probably starts like around December, January, and maybe some of February, although this year has been really cool the whole time. But those are the best weather-wise. And so sometimes that's kind of the higher season. The other time, which is if you're going here in February, March, April, May, when you're going in there during their hot summer. And then once you're around June, July, August, September, maybe some November, October, that's kind of the rainy monsoon season. So I wouldn't suggest you go down to the Phuket in June and July is a no-go because you're going to have a 50-50 chance of rain. And I would say no. I would say if it's your first time, stick to my time frame around December, January, February. That's the best shot. December, January being ideal.
As someone who was caught in a one-day monsoon in Riley Beach, I would highly recommend to avoid that as well because that was in August and it was gnarly. I'll just say it that way. And when you're on an island, there's not really much shelter. You can much places to run from when you've got torrential rain and downpouring winds. So I get that 100%.
I do want to add Kotsumui, which is the other East Coast, because there's two oceans. You got the Andaman, you know, Sea, and then you got the Gulf of Thailand. So if you're going to Koh Samui, which is another big famous island that, and they're actually, they just filmed the White Lotus season 3 there. So it's going to be a lot of tourism going there and Koh Phangan and where they have the full moon party. Like if you're a younger guy or a lady and you want to go experience that. If you're going to Koh Samui in that region, they have the opposite weather Phuket. So if Phuket is a lot of rain, then you can pretty much know that Koh Samui is going to be fine. So they usually have opposite weather. So their season, their good season actually starts like dry season is pretty good. I would say like February, March, April. So kind of take a look at where your destination is because we do have different weather. And folks, if you're going to go, I'm going to go to Thailand and Thailand's weather should be the same as Bali. I just want to let you know, Bali and Thailand have different weather. So Thailand could be totally fine. And then you go December in Bali, and you're like, man, it's raining all the time. So just keep in mind.
So Ben, you've talked through some absolutely fantastic things today, dropped a lot of knowledge, a lot of insider information for someone who is going to decide to go across the water and head to Thailand. One of my last questions for you is if someone is only going to take this trip to Thailand once in their lifetime, what is something that they absolutely cannot miss from an experience standpoint?
I think there's a lot of things that they should go do. I don't think they should miss the beaches. If you're going to go one time, I think you should make a stop in Bangkok because that's where all the fantastic shopping is. You're going to go there and you're going to go bring an extra bag. That's what I always tell people. If you're allowed two bags, bring one bag half empty. You're not going to need a lot of clothing because it's warm anyway. And then buy another bag on the way back because you're going to do some shopping in Bangkok. So I definitely would do that. Siam, Icon Siam is a wonderful place. Another one is Central World, which is fantastic food. And then when you go down to Phuket or if you go to Koh Samui, I would definitely go to some island hopping. Island hopping is definitely, I mean, Thailand has so many great islands. I know people think about PP Island, but one that I really love is actually a little bit far on the other side. And it looks water, looks just like the Maldives. It's called Similan Island. And it's deserted. They don't allow it. It's like a national park reserve, but it's super clear water. Similan Island is wonderful. If you like to go scuba diving, some of the places that people go scuba diving in Thailand, Koh Tao, which means like, by the way, K-O-H means island. So it's always called something, but Koh Tao, which is a turtle island. They're known for their scuba diving. And a lot of people go get PADI certified there so that they can get their certification for scuba. And it's one of the most affordable places in the world to go do those kind of things. But island hopping is fantastic. I also say this, if you're going to go island hopping, here's my insider tip. You should charter a boat instead of just doing a tour. If you can find a captain of a long tail boat, go back and talk to them. I'm telling you, even if you don't speak Thai, even if they overcharge you, it's still better experience and less expensive than you going on a 100-person boat with, a tour group of 100 Chinese tourists, which is the number one tourist destination from Thailand right now is China. And charter own boat. That's going to be the thing that I do for my clients and what I do for my folks. And it's probably going to be the best experience. They're going to take you to islands that are even unnamed. You're going to have lunch on a deserted island, they're going to picnic and have that and then be able to do kind of cool things. Go see coral, you know, then go see so many things. So island hopping, when you go down south, definitely food. Try other food that's just not Pad Thai. Try, get out of your comfort zone. Try the salty, the sweet, the curry you haven't tried before. Like I said, it doesn't have to be also on the street. A lot of the malls now at the food court have fantastic food. Look at what has a long line and try that. If it doesn't look all that great, then skip it. It's fine. There's always going to be a lot of food for you to try. If it looks appetizing, try it. Give yourself a good chance. And if you have points and miles, it should never be your once in a lifetime. I would learn points and miles and be able to do that. That's how I got started in points and miles, because I just want to take my family on trips. And if you do it, there's lots of airlines. I would say this, Japan Airlines, ANA through Japan. Here's my other tip. Look at Taipei. There's China Airlines, which is a SkyTeam Delta partner. There's EVA Airlines, which is United's partner. There is Starlux, which is Alaska's partner. So there are so many airlines, but you're probably going to fly out of Taipei or Japan to get to Thailand.
Ben, fantastic, fantastic information. You've mentioned a few times that you have your group trips and you have one coming up next year, January. So for the listeners that want to see Thailand like you do, they want to experience it like a local, where can they follow you? Where can they find out more about your group trip and anything else that you have to offer?
Yeah, you can easily find me on my website, bensbigdeal.com. So I also have an Instagram account, bensbigdeal. I talk all about it. I'm really excited. This is my third trip that I'm doing as a group. Everyone that came on back, they're like, Ben, when's your next trip? Where are you going? And I'm actually going to probably do one in middle of the year to another South American location. So follow me for that. I'll let that folks know. But Thailand's always going to be my baby. I think this is going to be something I want them to see, Thailand, and really get experience that's not just your own. Like, you could go there on your own, but most likely if you go there on your own, you're going to find a nice hotel. You're going to go hang out at the pool the whole day. Maybe you'll go find something to eat, but you won't get that full experience of going to, you know, seeing a beautiful view at sunrise at Chiang Na Chi, which in my opinion should be one of the wonders of the world in the Phang Nga region in Phuket. Being able to do island hopping, be able to do a catamaran and have a wonderful time. Some of the things that folks came to do with us were like, you know, they never got a chance. Like, I felt like when we were in the catamaran, I'm like, this is like a Jay-Z rap video that we were doing. And then when we were at the Michelin star place on the boat, we had like a 5-star Michelin on the river boat. We were able to do a tuk-tuk tour. We had 10, you know, speeding down the road, and we were doing a street food tour at night and getting street food, you know, from some of the top places in the world. So those are some of the things that you can expect. And in all ages, I would say that the majority of the folks that come are either, you know, working professionals that don't have time to plan, and I'll do all the planning for you, or at the same time, you just want to see the world through my eyes. And I'm definitely going to take that. And I also have my local guide, which is really my local advisor with me. They work with the Thai Tourism Board, so they're top notch and some of the best in the world. And we'll get your massages in there. I include in my thing a massage. We do a 2-hour massage. I don't want it. We do a 2-hour massage at some of the best places in the world. And then we even do the pickup from the airport. So as soon as you land, we're totally taking care of you until we send you back home.
Awesome, Ben. Well, thank you so much for all the insights and everything that you've provided today. Two last questions we always like to wrap the show up with. The first one is, who else should we have on this show for a future episode that's in the travel or the points and miles space that you would like to shout out that we want to get on the show for a future episode that you think our listeners would love to hear from?
DeAndre, I know almost everyone, but I will say this. I don't know if they've been on your show, but I think they're a great couple. There is a couple couples I want to bring up. One is called the Miles Couple. It's Mila and Brighton. I don't know if you've had them on. They're fantastic. Another one that's actually going to be joining my mentorship as a guest not far from now or long from now is actually John and, is it Ashton? They're called Points to Possibilities. Points to Possibilities. They're a great couple. They are coming to my mentorship to be a guest speaker. I don't know if you had Tommy Travels, like Tommy Lonergan. Tommy is fantastic as well. I really like Points of Travel Experts, which is Kahia Kehlani. Kehlani used to be on the Let's Get to the Points podcast for a long time, and she works with the airline. And so she gives really great insight from the airline perspective as being a 20-year veteran. Her husband works also for United. So both of them work for the airline industry. And it's a fantastic. They're points and miles people. And we talk about that a lot of times people think, well, if I work for an airline, I can fly for free. The problem is you can fly for free if there's space. If it's not, you know, you don't want to take vacation just to find out you're not going to be able to fly because there's no flights available. So they learn about points and miles that way as well. I think they're fantastic. Another one that I like is Ade. Ade is Nigerian born. He's right here in San Diego, and he's going to be running our Africa one very soon. Kyle Olson from CNN, he's an editor over there, used to write for The Points Guy. If you're at Kyle Olson, I think that's great. So I think the list goes on there. I literally, in my mentorship, every single week, I have a brand new class, whether it's hotel, credit card, or airlines. And these are all past guests I've had or future guests I've had.
Awesome. Well, about half of those people I've met, especially like at Travel More, other conferences. And so they're in the talks, but there's a couple others that you mentioned that we'll reach to get on the show as well. All of them would actually be amazing guests. So we'll look to get them all lined up. Ben, this has been fantastic. Any last thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I just want to say that if you're thinking about traveling the world, I know it's sometimes far. This is a long flight, you know, to get to Japan and to continue another 6 hours. Or get to Taipei and add another 3 hours. I know, but I just tell you right now, when you get to go to another place, one of the great things about traveling is you get to get out of your comfort zone. Yes, you're going to learn how it is to live on the other side where you're not speaking the language you speak. But you know what? It brings back a revelation. I've had many of my attendees that went to this trip to Thailand. It was their first time. They said, you know, they came to appreciate how people were different, but were really the same. And I think that's one of the things that until you go to experience it, that's something that you won't do until you get to be in it. You got to live it. And when you go out of a place that's not just a familiarity where you can just speak English and you're going to go, wow, I'm going to try to live like how other people live. I got to eat what they're eating. I got to try to learn their customs, their mannerism, things like that about Thai culture. Like, for example, when we Y, whoever's younger in the social status, like if you're younger, you start, you initiate to the older. If you're a student, you initiate to the teacher. If you're the employee, you initiate to your boss. That whole back and forth of that reflected in that how they treat you. You know, when you come in to Thailand, you're the customer and they're the staff. They treat you like a king when you're in Thailand. And I think you experience that. It's something that's unique. I don't know if you're going to experience that in other places around the world the same way, but I hope you do when you do come to Thailand.
Ben, very well said and an amazing note to end on. Thank you so much for all the knowledge that you've put into this episode today and all the insider information you provided to our listeners.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I hope you guys all experience the amazing country that is Thailand.
For the listeners out there, please go ahead and put Thailand on your radar if it isn't already. Hopefully you learned a little bit as to why I've mentioned so many times it's one of my favorite countries in the world from this episode alone. Ben's provided not just insights, but insider insights that I think anyone should note down for the next time you get a chance to experience the wonder of Thailand. If you enjoyed this episode and the podcast and the show as a whole, please don't forget to like, subscribe, rate it, leave a review. Tell your friends and send this to that person that you want to experience Thailand with as well. And we will catch you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.